The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it, it's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line? Now 20% lower. Family plans? Also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number. Not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Whether you're looking to buy your dream home or rent a sweet apartment, give Redfin your gotta-have-it wish list of property features, and you'll receive real-time notifications tailored just for you. Ready to see it up close and personal? Scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Don't wait to find your perfect match. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.
It finally happened. Marcelo Meyer gets called up to the big club and didn't go so well. We'll get into that. But Red Sox, partway through game one, I would say it was in the early innings, the news started leaking, and then Marcelo Meyer was, in fact, scratched from both of the doubleheader lineups in Worcester and made his way to Fenway Park. So we're going to talk about that, some aspects of the doubleheader. I am Terry Cushman, joined tonight by Jim Delfino, Chris Felico, a.k.a. the Italian Connection. I've been wanting to say that. Haven't been able to on the air, but yeah, it sounds like a late 80s WWE tag team. You know, like, you guys are going to face the Hart Foundation for the tag team titles.
You talking to me, Terry?
I guess. I don't know if you're a WWE guy. Clearly, Jim was, but, and I definitely was. I was grounded half my childhood for putting my brothers in the sharpshooter. So, yeah. But anyway,
that's a hitman move.
So, lots of implications with the Meyer call up. We were more optimistic last night about Bregman probably being a more short-term IL if he went on it. But as it turns out, he's going to miss probably at least half of what remains of this season. So not good. The corresponding move to that was Meyer. He was 0-for-4 in the game. Jim, what were your thoughts?
So starting with Bregman, obviously after the injury, we thought, you know, maybe it was going to be okay, you know, and then he woke up the next morning and obviously said that it was much more severe than he originally thought. So a lot of time you got adrenaline and a lot of things running through you right when the injury happens. So, you know, maybe for an hour or so, it doesn't feel that bad. And then after you take a shower and so forth, it starts really gnawing at you. So it seems to be that's what apparently happened here. Obviously, when it gets to feel like it's that severe, that's when they ordered the MRI. The positive out of this is that it's a strain. It's probably I don't remember seeing anything if they labeled it a grade one or grade two. If they're calling it a severe strain, it'd be a grade two. But there was no indication that there was a tear anywhere. So obviously, that is the good news out of this scenario. As far as what I would believe would be a best case scenario for a return would probably be, you know, that 6 to 8 week window of time. Just to tell you, like when I treat patients too that have bad quad injuries, calves, things like that, you know, it can be a 6 to 8 week period of time. So we'll see how fast he heals. A lot of people are making mention of the fact that he had a similar injury on the other side, and missed about 58 games. Well, he was also younger at that point too. So, you know, the younger you are, the quicker you can heal. The second part of that was my take on Meyer. Really tough day for him, 0-for-4 with 3 strikeouts. Again, I don't think anybody can be worried about that, but if they are, he's fitting right in. Now, I'm just teasing. Having to get the ride up, you know, the nerves, the butterflies. So we'll see how it goes. But, you know, they're already starting to Red Sockian him already, right? Start him at third, where he's only had a handful of games played, even in the minors. Then put him to short, then put him to third. So typical Red Sox in nature. What do you think, Chris?
I'm hoping he does better when he plays shortstop. That's the only hope I'm holding out for as far as at the plate. But no, I mean, in all seriousness, I went through an absolute crazy range of emotions in the last 24 hours. Starting with, I'm watching the game yesterday, actually in the car, getting my kids down to LBI for the weekend. And I actually watched the Bregman injury in person. I hear the announcer saying he's pointing to his leg, and I'm like, oh no. My son's saying, what does this mean? I'm like, our season's over. That's what it means. And because I had no confidence we were going to do anything, we end up winning the game. The other game gets rained out, and then about halfway through the first game today, we start hearing rumors about Marcelo Meyer, and I start getting excited, and I'm thinking, all right, this is going to rejuvenate the club. We end up winning that game. I'm pumped. Can't wait for it. And then the game came, and he went 0-for-4. Didn't look, you know, his first at-bat when he was 3-0, like, he looked like he had a pretty damn good eye, and then all of a sudden they just blew 3 strikes right past him, didn't even swing. And then I didn't necessarily see the plate discipline that I would like to see from him in comparison to Christian Campbell earlier on this season, who had great plate discipline, which is dissipated as the major league is starting to figure him out at the plate. But I also recognize that Marcelo Meyer has been probably the most popular prospect of the last 4 or 5 years since we drafted him in 2021. He's been the big name. Even though Roman Anthony passed him on the prospect list, he's been the guy over that time period. So there's a lot of butterflies there. But I can't lie and not say that I'm not necessarily disappointed. He came up to the plate a couple of times with the opportunity to either tie the game, take the lead, win the game, and nada. So how you feeling, Terry?
Yeah, I didn't really love the plate discipline, but it was a lefty in his first 2 or 3 at-bats. I think his first 2. And then he did come up against a righty that was Kittredge, and there were 2 outs, runners on second and third. So I'm like, all right, here we go. He's in there against a righty. This is his chance to kind of stamp something, you know, in his debut. And I can't remember if he struck out. I think, yeah, he did strike out because his first 3 at bats were strikeouts. He had a golden sombrero on the line in the 4th one, but he hit into a fielder's choice. And I'm not down on Meyer, and it wasn't the most well-planned debut. I mean, he only found out this morning, and I put that on the Red Sox. They should have had a good indication last night that more likely than not, regardless of how Bregman felt before and after he went to bed, he was probably going on the injured list and they were going to have to call up Meyer. So I kind of put that on Breslow a little bit, but you know, he gets the, you know, word this morning, and you know, it's not that far of a drive from Worcester to Fenway. Maybe with Memorial Day traffic, it might be a little busier, but not the most ideal thing. Here's where I'm really concerned. I felt the ominousness of Bregman's absence this game. And Meyer's a lefty. Anthony hit a home run tonight, ironically. They called up the wrong prospect. Kidding. But he definitely did hit a home run, though. But he's a lefty, and I'm like, how are you going to get balance here? The first 3 hitters in the first game were lefties: Duran, Devers, and Abreu. And then tonight it's like, and then Campbell's hitting fourth again, and he still doesn't look great. He did, the box score looks good because he had two hits, but he's not putting good swings on the ball. He's very apprehensive, and I think he's pressing, and he doesn't look good. And I don't think bringing him back to the four hole is really going to help. I don't know how many options they have, but you look at your right-handed hitters now. You got Rafaela, Narvaez, who's probably your best one, Connor Wong, and I think I'm missing one somewhere in there.
Story.
Story, who doesn't have a hit yet against the worst pitching in Major League Baseball, by the way. And another notable thing I pointed out in the war room, Alex Cora finally pinch hit him late in the game. I think there were runners on and at least one out, and they brought up Abreu, and which I thought was a good move. But so I just, this lineup is wonky right now, and I don't think calling Meyer and Anthony up are gonna, I mean, it's gonna help, but not in a, you know, not in a complete way, you know, when lefties are starting.
Well, you know, you guys brought up a lot of stuff there that I want to comment on, but I'll be brief on this. Number one, the concept of, a you know, bringing up a left-hander and you're becoming more left-handed because arguably Story's giving you nothing at the plate. And of course, you know, now with the injury to Bregman, you know, you don't have two right-handed bats that can provide you something of quality. If Mayer can hit against left-handed pitching, then it really doesn't matter. Same thing with Roman Anthony. If and when he gets here, if he can hit left-handed pitching, it doesn't matter if they're left-handed batters only. So the problem with that is it remains to be seen. So it's a, you know, it's a work in progress during the season while you're in a, you know, wild card or champ, you know, AL East championship run. So that's where it's difficult, because when you have too many questions in your roster, you don't tend to have good seasons, and it's all about building. The problem with the 2025 Red Sox is we've been building for 4 years, and you could argue even longer than that. You know, the 21 is the outlier, but they've been basically a 500 team for 6 years. They're 500 right now at 27-27. And lo and behold, I look, they have basically a 500 record against teams that are over 500 right now in the league and teams that are under 500. So they're not winning games enough against the competition that they need to clearly show that they are a team that could make a run in 2025. But they're also not feeding well against the teams that they should be beating, which are the ones under 500. You know, again, 4-3 against the White Sox. I know it's hard to win a doubleheader like they did, like today. You know, it's always known that doubleheaders are tough because you are taking a few guys out of the lineup. But getting back to the fact that you've got Trevor Story, who's just a black hole, Campbell, who's been struggling. You've got Toro in this game. I know he hit a home run, but he's not an offensive threat that you want to rely on. You got a rookie in Mayer on his first day. You got Sogard. You got Hamilton. You got Wong. I mean, where does it end where you only have the first three or four guys, you know, at the top of the lineup that you can really rely on? And now with Bregman gone, someone's got to step it up. So, you know, hopefully there's not going to be enough, you know, too much pressure on this kid, you know, thinking he's got to be the savior here, because if he has that in his mindset, you know, that could go the wrong way. And again, it would be total Red Soxian for them to screw up yet another young, promising stud. And, you know, Terry, you were mentioning before, like, you know, the how much we've heard of him, or I think, Chris, you did too. You know, again, yeah, we've heard a lot about him because when Chaim Bloom got here, you know, that was his first draft class. So, you know, and again, there was really a thought that he was going number one, right? And Charrington, you know, didn't pick him, and he fell to four. And we got him and, you know, set the world on fire in terms of the minor league development. So we've been watching this kid. I don't care if you're a casual fan or a diehard. You've been watching this kid this entire time. He's been the number one prospect. And to your guy's point, I know that Roman Anthony took over on that, but it was later. We've been following Meyer since the day he got drafted with close eyes. So he's going to be under some scrutiny. I hope it doesn't mess with him.
Yeah, I think, you know, the biggest problem that I have with this team right now is that, you know, you were saying, Jim, that you hope he doesn't have the amount of pressure that he's probably, you know, starting to feel and is going to have. And the reality is he's going to have more because with the injury to Bregman and the way that our team has been hitting, there's an immense amount of pressure on him to come in and be one of the guys that is going to help carry this offense, especially with one of our leaders. And then to be honest, our best overall hitter so far this season out of the lineup for significant time. And let's face it, like a guy like Christian Campbell, same thing, like came in and there's a lot on that kid to come in here and be a prominent part and fixture of this offense, especially with the fact that he's only one of the only, you know, right-handed bats that we have consistently in the lineup, right? So like he's got it almost twofold over Meyer. And the fact that we're moving them, like to me, Meyer and Campbell need to be glued to second and shortstop for the majority of their stay on this ball club. You want to like screw around with the guys, screw him at Story. He's not a part of your future. I don't care what his contract or how much is left. He's not a part of the future of this organization and the success that we hope to have long-term. So throw him around, whether it's first base, third base, I don't care. Put him in the ball club, put him on the bench, leave him there. I don't care. But there's too much of taking these guys and one day Campbell's in the outfield. He's playing second base. We're talking about first base. Who knows? Next thing you know, he's going to be the manager of the Red Sox at this point. You don't know what the heck to expect with this team. And that's the biggest problem I have. We are devoid of leadership because our best leader is now down for significant time. And to be honest, it's his first year with the ball club. There's no real other vocal leader. You know, we have people like Jaron Duran who basically are doing it with their let their play do the talking and their effort. But we don't have real vocal leaders on this team. And we got a lot of young guys with a lot of expectations on them. And in the perfect world, we would have had these guys up here with a bunch of stars or veterans performing and like, yeah, they would have a little bit of spotlight because they're prospects and they're highly touted and regarded, but they wouldn't have the level of pressure. But now it's like they need to be one of the guys. And that's a scary thought for a team that's like had a lot of expectations, hasn't made the playoffs. The fan base is rabid of just wanting to see any level of success. And we haven't. And I'm scared about that long term. So I don't know what to expect at this point.
So I've got some numbers here. Righty versus lefty. So this year he's actually got pretty even splits in terms of batting average against righty versus lefty. It's literally only 1 point apart. However, he does walk a ton more against left-handed hitters. This year he's got a 364 on base against lefties, only 300 versus righties. 9 home runs this year in Worcester. 3 of them did come off of lefties, so 3 of his 9. So that's this year with a pretty short sample size. Last year, bigger sample size, but he did miss a couple of months with a lower back injury. The splits are further off. So last year against righties, he hit 319 with a 383 on base. Then against lefties, he hit 258, which isn't terrible against lefties, but it's 60 points lower than, you know, the other side. And he had a 319 on base, which is pretty good either way. None of his home runs last year were off of lefties. Of his of doubles, he had 6 off of lefties, 22 off of righties. So not terrible. I mean, I don't think we should be pessimistic at all, but that is the better side. Anthony has actually slightly better splits over his career against lefties than he does righties. So a little bit of reverse split. Having said that, I'm still not comfortable. If you trotted out your 1 through 5 and it was all lefties against a left-handed starter, I still think that's asking for trouble.
You know, if it's all right, I want to go back to Story because he just irritates me so much. Something that you brought up, Chris, about, you know, putting him in a different position. I've warmed up to this a lot. Initially, I wasn't quite sure because I wasn't sure where you wanted to really put him. I would disagree with you about putting him at third because he just doesn't have the arm for that. So I rule that out. He's obviously not having a strong enough arm to be the shortstop anymore. As far as Campbell's concerned, I want to know now with the Bregman injury, how strongly they're going to work him out at first base, because it's been a little bit quiet now over the last 24 to 48 hours with that. So, and of course he played second. I think the best place for Trevor Story moving forward for the rest of this season and maybe beyond is second base. And the reason I say that is because he has the arm for second. I think he can be, in all honesty, an above average defending second baseman, which I think will help. It'll give Meyer a chance to play short, because Terry brought this up a long time ago, and I don't know when you mentioned it, but I think it was on Twitter. If Meyer comes up here and does well, he's not going to lose that spot if he's playing short. They're not going to bring him down if he's crushing it. How could they? Especially now with the injury. So Trevor Story at second, Campbell at first. Campbell's a guy that, you know, we've been talking about this all season. Is he good enough for second base? I mean, they are moving him around. As Chris mentioned, I think it's a really important thing to stunt a player's growth, especially as a rookie. So they need to say, look, you know, if he did come to them and say, I'll do it, maybe he's motivated to do that. Not that he needs the motivation, but maybe he'll become good at it because he wants to be good at it. Maybe he doesn't like second base. Maybe he doesn't like center field. We really don't know. He's not going to come out and say anything because he doesn't want to be a bad guy or have that kind of rap sheet. So I would say, if his defense is really poor, put him at first, put Story at second, Meyer will be at your short, and then you can have Sogard at third base at this point. Because, I mean, frankly, Sogard hasn't been a black hole. He's getting on. I mean, you know, he's not a first base by trade, so he's made some mistakes there at first. But he has picked a few in the dirt. He did with Meyer's first play today, so... but I think he could play third, and that could be your infield for a little while until we find out more on Bregman and what that looks like.
I'm going to say this for the first time. I'm calling bullshit on Campbell going to first. It should have happened by now. I don't think it's going to happen. How many games did Sogard ever play at first before he became the guy? 5? Literally, okay. That's more than I thought. I thought they literally just put him there. Marcelo Meyer went to third in a pinch to get called up. And I guess he's played a little bit of second, short, and third this season in Worcester. But I don't, what's the holdup with Campbell? It should have happened by now. I think they want it to be Devers. Now, maybe the Bregman thing screws up everything now, and maybe now they're back to the drawing board, but I don't think he's going to first.
You know, that's fine. I mean, you know, it's hard to say at this point because everything's going to be focused on Meyer now, but, you know, I also don't want to see Meyer, you know, being moved around second, short, third. These guys got to come up. They've got to have a single position so that they can excel at that position and not just be a bunch of guys that are going to feel like, you know, backups.
Just for clarity, too, I'm okay with him playing first. I don't have a problem with it. I just don't. I just reading the tea leaves, it's starting to look more far-fetched.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is that we're in this position because the Sox didn't have a plan. The plan long-term was for these guys to come up and play their natural positions. We didn't have a real backup plan in case something like this happened, where you want to trade a guy, can't trade him. He ends up getting hurt, and he was terrible anyway in Casas. You bring in a guy like Bregman, piss off your star, and now he's your DH, and he gets hurt. Now the other guy doesn't want to do anything except bat. So, I would be fine with Campbell at first, too. The only concern I would have is that if we do that, is it like how long is that for? Because to your point, Jim, like, yes, it's serviceable for a certain amount of time, but if he struggles at the plate, like how much does that screw with him long-term in the going back and forth? I would just like to have a plan, because right now it's pretty cloudy skies for the Sox for this season, because we really didn't have an answer for first. Yes, Sogard's played okay, but he's not the long-term answer. Toro's certainly not the long-term answer. And now you have the Bregman injury, and we already were thinking, like, Bregman's probably not here next year. So what's the long-term answer there? So it's a lot of question marks, which we've become very accustomed to as Red Sox fans, and it's pretty frustrating.
I would still, if I'm the Red Sox front office and even Alex Cora, I would just take one last good shot at getting Devers over to first. And the reason I say that, and I know he's crushing it at DH, and that's important. We need production like that. But if you move him to first, you have finality with it. You have closure. He's the guy. It's not a discussion anymore. We just need that to go away. And then we need to start focusing on other problems with the team. And I think Devers going to first will do that. I don't think Casas is coming back. You don't have another first baseman in the upper levels of the system. I keep seeing clips of this Justin Gonzalez guy, not to be confused with our pal on Twitter. Literally, there's a good prospect named Justin Gonzalez, and he's a power hitting first baseman, but he's only in single A Greenville. So a couple years out, conservatively. So I would do that. I would lock that position down. And if you're Devers, you got to be looking at this team as kind of an unsettled mess right now. And, you know, Bregman's down. Like, if there was ever a time he should feel compelled to step up, it's definitely now. It's 1,000% right now. And with Trevor Story, I think he's close to being off the team. I really believe that. It could be another 5 or 6 weeks, but his metrics are taking a nosedive, and he can't do anything with the worst pitching in MLB right now. He's just a complete zero and an automatic out. And I don't think we can live with that. In the month of May, his OPS is coming into tonight, so theoretically it's lower now. 4.16. It's almost half. Well, I shouldn't say almost half of what the league average is, but league average is about 720 or so. And you know, he's 300 points below that. That's just, you're not a major league baseball player.
Yeah, I mean, as far as Trevor Story is concerned, he's played more games this year than he has the last two years. 26 games last year, 43 in 2023. He's at 49 right now. But that's not even something to be happy about, because the production is just not there. I think he's leading the league in strikeouts at 62. A guy like him as a middle infielder, that shouldn't happen unless you're going to be putting out a lot of home runs and a lot of power and a lot of doubles to be leading the league in strikeouts. He's been a black hole. I agree with you. I mean, I think to assemble what you have right now in the best scenario, and I know I mentioned about Campbell at first, but I think the best scenario is Devers is at first, right? You have somebody at second, let's call it Campbell, Meyer at short. And then you could bring up Roman Anthony to either DH. There's another option. Devers at first. Would you put, even though he's had great defense, would you put Raphael at second, Meyer at short? So now center field, you bring up Roman Anthony. Now you have Meyer, Anthony, and Campbell on this team. Campbell could DH.
Yeah, you could do that, or it could just be a revolving thing like we've talked about. But, and it's wonky as hell to take your best defensive outfielder and bring him into the infield, but you might have to make it all fit.
It's the only way Roman Anthony gets on this team, unless you're going to DH him. And I mean, hell, he came into the infield last year because of Story's injury. Again, it's a different reason, but just something to think about.
With Bregman down, like a week ago, if I said, what area of the team is going to be your number one trade target, your big splash trade target, you know, we might have said the rotation at that point. Maybe we would have said the bullpen. Right now, I think a right-handed bat is close to the top of that list. So I don't, maybe a move happens. I think Abreu stock is still fairly high. Duran's the only other guy that can really get you something, but I don't know. This just goes back to what I've been saying. You know, every day we all do these mental gymnastics in our head to try to come up with the perfect alignment, and you just can't do it. It doesn't exist. There's a bunch that are serviceable, but the perfect solution isn't there.
Well, to your point, if you are a buyer at this year's trade deadline, and you just said to me that a right-handed hitter would be on your list, whether it's a power hitter, combination, whatever, the question then becomes, what is he going to lead towards as what position? Are you going to try to find a first baseman? Well, if you put Raffy over there, you're not going to move him again, to your point. Are you going to try to get a center fielder? Well, what if you moved Raphael at a second base and brought up Roman Anthony? You don't need a left fielder. You don't really need a right fielder. You don't need to go in the catching realm. If you had an opening at DH, whether it's Yoshida or however you want to work it, this would allow you to go after virtually any right-handed bat, regardless of their position, and make them your DH when you trade for them.
So I got a question. So who are you looking to trade on this team? And is there a particular right-handed bat, infield or outfield, in mind that you can think of that you would try to acquire for this team right now?
Well, let me throw out a quick Band-Aid. It's not a slam dunk, but it could end up being pretty good. And he plays for the Orioles. You could probably go get Ryan Mountcastle, whose stock is very low right now, and not give up anyone of major significance. And he can play first base, and he would probably DH at this point as well to keep his career alive. And he has hit for power at various points in his career. So if you want a quick solution while you try to sort the rest of it out, that's it. The other guy that I think is at the top of everybody's list plays for the team that we're about to play starting Monday. Rhys Hoskins plays for the Brewers. I like it. He's a power guy. Mostly, I wouldn't say he's a pull hitter. He does have power to straightaway center and occasionally right center, but I think that's pretty good as well. And you're not giving up a major haul also.
Anyone for you, Jim?
You know, you really caught me off guard on that one. It's kind of hard to say. I was just trying to look up Adolis Garcia's numbers to see if there was a possibility if, you know, the Rangers fall out of it, if they would be willing to move him. He's 32. He's an outfielder, but he could DH for you. His numbers aren't really that good. He's got an OPS just under 700, seven home runs, but he certainly can hit. You know, I just looked up Hosking's numbers, and they're really good. 292, seven home runs, 28 RBIs, and an OPS of 871. I mean, why not? I mean, he would definitely give you the impact, and if you don't move Devers off of DH, you insert him as your first baseman. I liked him when he was with Philly. So that would be a really sharp move, Terry. I think so.
You know, Jim, you just kind of stumbled onto something, though. I wasn't even really thinking about Garcia, but the one guy they would definitely take because he mashes in that stadium is Abreu. So Garcia didn't have a very good year last year either, though. 224 with a 284 on base. He did hit 25 home runs. He's a righty. What does he have for service time? Oh, he's only not well. You'd get him for 2026 as well, and then he's a free agent in 2027. But that would be his age 34 season. So it's a candidate. I'm not saying it's a slam dunk, but maybe Texas would be interested.
Do you think that that's about the most you could get for an Abreu at this point?
No, like a player no. That well, I mean, you might be able to get somebody younger with similar numbers.
Yeah, that's what know. I was thinking.
Yeah, I don't until Abreu can hit lefties, and he's not even getting the opportunity to do it, but until proven otherwise, he's Jock Peterson 2.0.
Yeah.
Sorry, Chris. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I don't necessarily have a player in mind. I think a week ago, I mean, I thought a lot of our problems could be solved internally and we were just reluctant to do it. And then everything changed with Bregman. But I would be more apt to probably trying to get an infielder than an outfielder. I just think adding more outfielders to this team, like, we don't need to create any more blocked pathways for Roman Anthony. So I don't necessarily know if I'm a proponent for that, especially like we need to get rid of Masataka Yoshida or figure something out for him. I would definitely probably do something as far as from the infield perspective. And I had the players that I think I'd be the most apt to trade. Abreu's on that list for sure. I don't even necessarily know who else we could trade other than Abreu, because I don't think it's Duran at this point. And I just don't know who else really has that much value unless you're trading one of the quote-unquote the guys.
I was just looking at Nathaniel Lowe, but he's a lefty.
Another name that you could put on that list, but unfortunately he's left-handed. But again, if you had Casas too, you would have still had him. But Josh Naylor is another name. I don't know if Arizona is going to fall out of that. They're all neck and neck over there, but he's a free agent after 26, so you'd have him for a year and a half. Again, you know, the only caveat is he's left-handed, but that might be another option too.
I could see the Sox hitting coach. It's going to be like a scene out of Moneyball when they're telling Hattieburg, like, it's so easy to play first base. Like, how easy is it? Like, it's ridiculously hard. They're going to be talking to our lefties and be like, you can bat righty. How hard is it? It's easy.
Another guy I like, and I always try to make a case for him once a year, Nick Castellanos. I don't know if Philly would trade him, but, I mean, we've got enough surplus in certain spots where, you know, conceivably a deal could get made. If Dombrowski would even deal with the Red Sox.
Can we trade for Dombrowski?
Hoskins would already be our first baseman if that were the case.
He would have traded for him a long time ago. Absolutely.
Let me just pull up Mountcastle's career splits here. I'm just curious. All right. So against righties, he hits 255. He's a 279 hitter career against lefties. 332 on base against lefties versus 304. So he's another like Ref Snyder type guy by the looks of it. How are the home runs? Oh, wow. But he hits more doubles against righties. Wow, that's wonky as hell. Also hits for more home runs against righties. So I guess there's balance with Mountcastle either way. You're either going to get more hits or more power on either side of the plate. But that's the quick Band-Aid move, I think, if you want to do something like that.
I like the Hoskins move because I think he would still provide you some good impact and play first base for you if you're not going to move Devers. So like I had said before, if Devers plays first, you kind of, if you brought Raphael in to play second base and then you bring up Roman Anthony for center field and kind of leave your DH spot a little open if you want to have Yoshida in there, if he can actually swing the bat for a period of time before you can go out and get either a bat, that's option A. Option B, you leave Devers at short, at DH, and you try to get a guy like Hoskins that can play first for you.
I would love Hoskins. It would probably take a little bit more, and he's a free agent after the year, so it's only a rental. The on TikTok, which if you haven't seen that, just search for Bastards of Boston on TikTok. The example I gave was maybe trade Tanner Houck for Rhys Hoskins, and you're trading 2 years of service time for a rental, but I don't know. I'm not saying I love it, but it's an easy one-for-one trade if you didn't want to touch your farm.
Well, I think an acquiring team like Milwaukee would be interested in that. They do have what they think is a really good pitching training staff, and they're really high on trying to be able to fix guys that are broken, kind of like we're supposed to be. Maybe you could do something like that. Hate the idea that he's a free agent at the end of the year. If we had one more year attached to that, I would probably say go for it 100%. I'm not a Tanner Houck fan. I never was. I was concerned about, you know, his being an all-star last year, how his next year would turn out. And when you really look at the big picture on a lot of these guys, you know, who's really taken a step forward here? Raphael has been okay. I don't know. Connor Wong has gone backwards. Tanner Houck has gone backwards. You know, we don't have a lot of faith in many of these guys. We don't know when is Cutter Crawford coming back here? You know, I mean, he was supposed to start a rehab assignment, I think. So
no, he's throwing bullpen sessions at the moment, but okay. He won't be back for at least 5 weeks or so. But the thing with him is how much trade value will he have?
Nothing.
With his knee? Like there's just so much uncertainty. So, I mean, maybe he'll just be the guy we need at the time he comes back. You know, I mean, Giolito tonight, we didn't even talk about him, but he had a 14 point something ERA coming into Fenway. You know, that was his home ERA, and he threw seven scoreless. And I know this Orioles team is bad, but the offense isn't bad. It's mostly the pitching. Like they got guys that can hit. So, you know, and I just thought that was an impressive performance there, but if he's going to keep battling like that, I mean, he's a solid number four. Giolito.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to put a lot of stock in when you're facing an Orioles team that is doing bad. And I know they have some hitters, but they're not like, you know, they're not playing like they were a few years ago. So it's kind of hard to give them too much kudos on an Orioles team versus somebody that's a little bit of a better quality or more of a chance to be a contending team. But, you know, at 5 feet away, you got to look at it and say, you went extra innings in one game against the Orioles to win, and then you lost the other one. So that's the problem with the 2025 Red Sox. They are so mid, it's not even funny. Like I said, half their wins are against teams with better, you know, 500 or plus record, and half of them are against teams below 500. You know, they're just a mediocre team. No one's really jumped off the page and gotten better or taken another stride on this team from really last year. So, it's tough. They're just living.
Yeah, I mean, the entire organization is malfunctioning. I mean, Meyer getting called up, like I said, today, you know, it was just kind of thrown together, but it could have been planned better, and I put that on the front office, and Alex Cora's had the worst season of his tenure as a manager, and just the lineup is just wonky as hell, and I don't know how you fix it all at once. It's just a mess, but let's go ahead and just get over to tomorrow's matchup. The Red Sox have a chance to win the series 3-1. I think we're back to 500 right now. Yeah, 27-27. Yep. So we'll have a chance to go one game over that. Dean Kramer versus Walker Buehler tomorrow. I think we can feel okay about Buehler, although I did say that, you know, the Orioles offense is not bad, but Kramer has a 5.50 ERA on the season. He hasn't pitched great as of late. He did give up 4 runs in each of his last 2 starts, so he didn't get killed, but he didn't look great. Pitched into the 6th inning, but gives up a lot of hits. 16 combined hits in the last 2 starts. So is Kramer a lefty or a righty? Let me pull it up. He is a righty. So theoretically, we, you know, there's several combinations of guys we can put in there tomorrow to put up some runs.
I mean, going in this series, I said they were going to split 2-2. On paper, yeah, I feel confident we should win with Walker Buehler and then going up against a righty with a lefty heavy lineup. But I just don't know what Sox are going to show up. To your point, like, yeah, the Orioles can hit and their pitching's supposed to be garbage, but look pretty good tonight. Gun to my head, I say we win, but I'm absolutely not shocked if we split, and that's what I picked before the series. So
I picked a split two to two. Actually, you know, it really kind of depends on how Buehler is. I think they could score a few runs tomorrow against the Orioles, but it really is going to depend on how well Buehler is, and if, of course, he doesn't get thrown out of the game like he did last time. So, you know, that's always on the table, I suppose.
Well, we didn't cover it like we should have, but he was pretty remorseful about it and seemed to know as soon as he got ejected, oh no, I just screwed my bullpen so bad by not.
Should be a new rule: if you get thrown out, you bring Story with you.
Yeah. Yeah, well, at least he's being pinch hit for now, so maybe that's one step closer to him being out the door. But we'll be back tomorrow. Not sure the alignment. It has been pretty consistently Charlie and Jeremy, so we'll get that finalized as well as the rest of the week. So we'll see you then. Take care.
Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line, now 20% lower. Family plans, also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1-pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to aero hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free four-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free four-year warranty. Tonal.com.